Juan Cole is Richard Mitchell Collegiate Professor of History at the University of Michigan. For three decades, he has sought to put the relationship of the West and the Muslim world in historical context. His most recent book, just out this month, is The New Arabs: How the Millennial Generation is Changing the Middle East. He has also recently authored Engaging the Muslim World and Napoleon's Egypt, Invading the Middle East, both by Palgrave Macmillan, and about a dozen other books about the history, politics, and culture of the Middle East. Cole is a public intellectual who writes frequently for Common Dreams, Truth Dig, Alternet, The Nation, and other publications, speaks regularly on radio and TV, and posts daily on his website, Informed Comment, Thoughts on the Middle East, History, and Religion. Thanks for joining us today, Professor Cole, and welcome to KABU.
Thanks so much for having me.
You reported this morning that President Obama compelled Israel to cease its attack on Gaza. Last night, Israel stopped its shelling of Gaza, but only after 2 weeks of killing almost 1,000 and injuring thousands of other civilians and inflicting much misery on what is already essentially a large prison camp. What are Israel's real objectives here? These attacks are not, as it claims, about Hamas and eliminating tunnels and rockets. What is really going on here?
The Israeli government was very upset when it managed to thwart John Kerry's peace initiative this past year, and the peace process, so-called, crashed and burned, that the Palestine Liberation Organization, which rules the West Bank, reached out then to Hamas in Gaza to form a national unity government. It's not much of a government, but there was a threat of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza somehow getting together and maybe even jointly going to the United Nations with a legal complaint against Israel for its continued colonization of Palestinian land. And I think, and many observers in the region believe, that the real reason for this attack on Gaza was an attempt to divide and rule, to keep the Palestinians away from one another.
And the U.S. Congress, of course, voting unanimously to support Israel's right to defend itself, and the U.S. media in general refusing to criticize Israel policies. You've even referred to them as Palestine deniers who are, if anything, more blinded and fanatical than climate change deniers. How is it that the U.S. media and Congress are so timid about challenging Israel and critiquing it publicly?
Well, I should say, first of all, that the media is diverse, and while American media has remarkable blindness to the actual situation of Palestinians, it does include seasoned reporters. One thinks of Ben Wiedemann on CNN or Richard Engel at MSNBC, who know exactly what the score is and have said so on camera. But Congress, on the other hand, is weird. The debates in Congress about this issue are so completely one-sided, and all you have to do is look at Prime Minister's question time on C-SPAN of the British Parliament debating this issue to see what a real debate would look like and what actual critical comment would look like. And why the U.S. Congress should be so one-sided on this issue is not a huge mystery. It's because the U.S. Congress is extremely corrupt. Our representatives are more or less bought and paid for. And the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, a kind of umbrella lobby that organizes some 14,000 subsidiary lobbies, actively punishes any congressman that does anything but fawn over Israeli government policy by throwing its money to the other candidate. Most of our congressional races are relatively close, and even a little bit of money thrown to the other guy hurts. And the constituents in most of the districts in the United States don't really care about this issue one way or another. So it's single interest politics that pushes it. That's the same reason why the House of Representatives in particular is so one-sided on global warming issues. It's because big oil gives them a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. And because of this one-sided coverage or attention, most Americans may be in the dark about the rest of the world's condemnation of Israel's policy. And you mentioned British Parliament debates. But what is the rest of the world, including the UN, Europe, and the Mideast, doing to pressure Israel to stop its bombardment and its treatment of Palestinians?
Well, the rest of the world generally doesn't do much at all. The fact is that, you know, we're still seeing in international affairs great power politics and spheres of influence, and the world has recognized that Israel and Palestine is the United States' sphere of influence. U.S. policy, in turn, really is governed by domestic considerations and single interest lobbies. And so that's why the situation is so intractable. The European Union has taken some steps to condemn Israeli settlement of the West Bank. Even during the last year, when there were supposedly peace talks going on that would lead to a Palestinian state, the land on which any Palestinian state would be erected was gradually being taken away from the Palestinians by huge Israeli apartment complexes. Bulldozers were being brought in, and huge building works were being carried out on Palestinian land that wasn't being bought or paid for. It was simply being usurped. And so the European Union has increasingly boycotted any Israeli enterprise on the West Bank, and has insisted that the goods produced in the West Bank by Israeli squatter firms should be so labeled. And the British, French, Dutch, and other European governments have increasingly warned their own corporations and companies from investing in Israeli enterprises in the West Bank, because it seems clear that under European Union law, they could be sued by the Palestinians because what they're doing is illegal.
Well, let's talk a minute about the BDS movement, because it does seem like it's growing not only worldwide, but in the United States. And Noam Chomsky in the this week's Nation has expressed some skepticism about the effectiveness of boycott, divestment, sanctions regarding Israel, and whether this movement has the steam that the anti-apartheid movement had. What do you think is the effectiveness of the BDS movement?
Well, I think that the strategy is diverse among advocates of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. As I said, increasingly, you see in Europe even a mainstream consensus in government and business that Israeli economic enterprises in the West Bank itself must be boycotted, that what they're doing is simply illegal in international law and indeed in European law. And I think that's right. That is to say, companies that are primarily based in the West Bank or have a large presence in the West Bank, which are Israeli, are breaking international law, and it's not as though they have a license from Palestine to operate on Palestinian territory. And so I think that regardless of whether it's an effective strategy or not, with regard to the West Bank, I think it's just prudent and doing what is legal to sanction those companies. However, there are those who want to attempt to boycott and sanction Israel per se. And that's a more difficult proposition. Of course, there are Israelis, about 20% of the population, who are opposed to this particular war. In polling, over 50% of Israelis have said that they'd be willing to trade territory for peace. A lot of Israelis don't approve of the squatter settlements in the West Bank. So subjecting all of them to sanctions raises a lot of issues, and of course would cut the world off from peace groups like B'Tselem, who do essential work and might not thrive were they boycotted. So you had some of these same dilemmas with regard to South Africa as well.
And Israel's policies are, of course, dependent on U.S. support, are they not? The United States has a huge role in dictating what happens, and the United States could easily persuade Israel to change course if it was in the U.S. interest or at least politically inclined to do so?
All the U.S. would have to do to settle this whole thing would simply to stop vetoing United Nations Security Council resolutions regarding Israeli illegal activity in Palestine. And were it to withhold its veto, the resolutions would pass. And with regard to Iran, the U.S. was perfectly happy to make the resolutions a basis for a worldwide economic boycott of Iran. And with regard to Iraq, the United Nations Security Council resolutions were cited as a basis for actually going to war against Iraq because they were flouted. So I think that were the U.S. serious about wanting to settle this, could simply stop running interference for Israel in world bodies. And I think one of the frustrations in Washington and Tel Aviv is now that the International Criminal Court, which neither the U.S. nor Israel has signed on to, but which has standing in most of the countries of the world, could well take up this issue in ways that the United States could not forestall.
Well, even though there is a ceasefire now, Hamas and Palestinian activists have said that even though there's a ceasefire, unless there is a serious political deal and an end to the blockade of Gaza, one can be assured that the struggle won't end sometime soon. Do you see any difference in the resistance this time compared to the last decade of previous attacks and resistances?
Well, the people in Gaza don't have any choice but to attempt to resist. The vast majority of them, over 70%, used to live in what is now southern Israel. Their homes, their farms, their property were all taken away from them, and they were chased out of them by militant Zionists in 1948 who quite deliberately engaged in the ethnic cleansing of the majority of the Palestinians in order to take over their land. And so the people there in Gaza were expelled and were crowded into, 40% of them still live in refugee camps. And then in 2006, elections were held for the Palestine Authority that Hamas won. It is a party of the religious right, doesn't recognize Israel, although why it should matter that a tiny population of 1.7 million doesn't recognize Israel, I'm not sure. But they didn't, and the Israelis found it unacceptable that they had won the elections. And so they kidnapped about a third of the parliamentarians, tried to destroy that government, overthrew it through a coup in the West Bank, and confined it to Gaza. And then they imposed a civilian blockade on Gaza. They don't let the people in Gaza export most of what they make, which, of course, has thrown the people into severe unemployment, 40% or so. 56% of families are food insecure. They're not starving, but they're a couple paychecks away from going to bed hungry. And the Israelis have actually connived at keeping out materiel necessary for infrastructure and daily life. They say they do so for security reasons, but it's obvious that they're basically engaged in collective punishment. They're using the children of and the women of Gaza, the non-combatants, as a bargaining chip, and their welfare is being bargained against, and their hope that that people will become so dissatisfied with this horrible situation that they will overthrow Hamas, and that Israel will manage to get a government in Gaza which will police the strip for Israel, and which will keep the population quiescent and make them acquiesce in their situation that Israel has dictated to them.
Well, in terms of this resistance, Juan Cole, we want to mention your new book, and you've written about the new wired generation and to what extent they have transformed struggles in the Middle East. Do you want to comment on how the internet and new social media have played a role in both Palestine and the global movement for peace and justice in Palestine?
Oh, absolutely. Well, if the first thing to say is that the Arab world, about 370 million people, i.e. larger than the United States, is very young. The median age is 24, and over a third of the population belongs to Generation Y, or the millennial generation, that was born from the late 70s through about the year 2000. That generation is, of course, the one that came to consciousness after the Cold War was over and at the time of the rise of the Internet. And so it is a generation that is particularly savvy about the Internet. In Gaza, the vast majority of the population is children and youth.
And so and that's something to remember as the bombs rain on Gaza, to remember that the majority are children.
Well, if you see apologists for this war say that the people of Gaza, you know, chose the war because they voted for Hamas, well, I mean, I'm sorry, but very few of them were of age that they could vote. And so they're nevertheless being bombed and crowded into refugee compounds and schools and so forth. The children are the ones that are suffering in all this. 80% of the people who have been killed have been non-combatants, many of them women and children. So the young people, find themselves in this horrible situation of being blockaded by the Israelis. Many of them are not very happy with Hamas, frankly. They're not, their mindset is not that of the religious right. And they form a movement in the past year in Gaza called Rebellion on the model of the Egyptian militantly secular movement, which critiques Hamas. But during this war, I think the entire population of Gaza is suffering and hates what's being done to them. They have been assiduous in photographing and making videos of the extent of the damage that's being inflicted on them, and horrible pictures have come out of death and destruction. And, you know, in the old days, the Israelis could do these things to the Palestinians, and the world really didn't see it. It was only reported in print, which is much less visceral. And these pictures and this video and the personal testimonies and the pictures of the grieving relatives, all of these things, I think, hit the world in the gut in a way that the old print media couldn't. And I think it's had a big impact on the prosecution of the war.
Well, thanks so much for speaking with us today, Juan Cole. You can read Juan Cole's comments daily on his website and blog, juancole.com, and in his new book, The New Arabs, How the Millennial Generation is Changing the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah, here's a day in the life of a Palestinian. While the West turns a blind eye, stating his position, yeah, at least unstable. The West being blamed, the EU is racist, with the heads in shape. America, Britain and Israel are all the same. Money or weapons, that's the name of the game. No one's happy about the situation.
That's Palestine Anthem from the M1 All-Stars on their Free Palestine EP. And before that, we heard Laurie Mercier talking with Professor Juan Cole about recent events in Palestine, Gaza, and the Israeli actions there.